Bob Barrett wants to author the Vision Guilty Bill that we've been pushing that little one. So,
sure, sure.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I'm going to introduce it too.
And it's technically, it's the, are we the budget division now?
I really feel that we have to find some way.
I'll just say E12 policy and budget. Yeah. Okay. Good morning, everyone. The Senate E12 Policy and Budget Division will come to order. Today's Thursday, January 15th. Today, we're going to focus on world's best workforce. But first, I'd like to give everyone an update. There's a picture of Leif Lester Arneson. And as you recall, at our last meeting, Bjorn was leaving for the hospital, and so we're very happy to announce the arrival of Leif, 9 pounds, 5 ounces, 22 inches. Mom Brittany and Bjorn are doing well. They're all at home. Bjorn's doing the cooking. He'll be back with us within a couple of weeks, I trust. So, great news.
Thanks.
We are going to have several testifiers on the world's best workforce, and not on the agenda, but I'm so happy we're able to have, I'd say would be the inspirational force, the father, if you will, for capturing the spirit of world's best workforce. And that would be Representative Paul Marquardt. And Representative Marquardt, if you could join us. And as we had discussed, we're going to get the update today, but this is in law as a result of the conference committee. It was a House proposal, but we embraced it, and here we are. So maybe just a brief background on expectations and what your vision is as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's an honor to be here. And Mr. Chair, you are way too humble, because the world's best workforce would not be in state law if it wasn't for the way you championed this and your committee in the Senate. And so I just really, really appreciate that, and all the additions and work that you did on that, on the early childhood portion, and making sure that that's part of this plan. But thank you so much for that. And, we made in the last couple of years some really major investments in education. And I know in the future we're going to be making more investments. And what really is nice about the world's best workforce is that all of those investments that were made and all the ones into the future is not going into the same system as before. It is a new model, a new system of accountability and strategic planning that will assure that we move towards the world's best workforce. And what the world's best workforce really does is it's dollars now that go into a system that will assure that every dollar will go towards efforts and strategies that have a proven track record of improving student performance and closing the achievement gap. And you've heard from folks, the One Minnesota Conference and others, how important it is in a workforce that is slowing down as far as new people coming in, that the way in which we're going to improve our economy is through a more well-trained, more productive, well-educated workforce, and that gets us there. So I think the biggest point is it's a public engagement tool, but it is no longer, as we used to say, just plopping money onto the formula or plopping money into other areas. It's going into this new system that the intent is to assure accountability and strategic planning. So I think it magnifies all the efforts that you do when you put dollars into early childhood education or career planning or whatever. It really puts that accountability factor. So, Mr. Chair, thank you so much again. It was an honor working with you the last 2 years as the chair of the House Education Committee, and thanks for all your efforts here.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Okay, well, we're going to go next to the update from the Department of Education. Members, you recall that the legislation asked districts to provide a progress report on how you're doing on Ready for K, other objectives, that benchmarks, if you will, that we have in statute. And the Assistant Commissioner, Steve Dibb, will address where we're at in the Progress for World's Best Workforce. Welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for Mr. Chair and members of the committee for holding this hearing today. My name is Steve Dibb. I actually serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Education and have been engaged in this work since the legislation passed. And it's been a great experience. Today we'd like to provide you with a little bit more information. You have two documents in front of you. One is a one-pager that we have on the department website and suitable for copying and handing out to friends and relatives and neighbors if you wish. The other is a
slide. We appreciate
the
one-pagers.
The one-pagers.
Yes.
The presentation, you have a PowerPoint presentation also, and we'll be following that format as we go through today. So we'll start with the PowerPoint right away.
Yes.
We'd like to provide the goals of the presentation, some of the key components. Not everyone may be familiar with all the components of it. We also want to take a look at some statewide data around the five goals of the world's best workforce and talk a little bit, and I think our other guest speakers today will also speak to the alignment of strategies and work that they're doing in their districts under the world's best workforce and how it acted as impetus for them to do that. On the next slide are the five goals of the world's best workforce. And I think I can say without hesitation that our districts have embraced these five goals. K-12 school district needs to be concerned with everything from school readiness all the way through graduation and post-graduation to ensure that students are career and college ready. How we address those five goals is really the work of the districts and their planning process. The next page, if we incorporate this into our day-to-day work as educators, it really becomes a state accountability system, as Representative Marquardt said. The result is that it's locally owned. So when we take a look at hearing what districts are doing, every plan looks a little different because they tailor it to their local context, their students, and again, it's developed with their parent and community engagement. I think that's one of the real strengths of this legislation is really calling out the need to engage the community and stakeholders in this plan and communicating that plan through public meetings, through posting on the website, through the district advisory committee, all those avenues for involvement by the community. Again, the legislation is supported by MDE guidance and supported through technical assistance, continuous improvement planning, really is, provides a framework for districts to really look at the continuous improvement process around of student achievement in their districts. So moving on to the next slide, page 5, it says that the school board is to adopt a plan to support and improve teaching and learning. It includes those locally defined goals and measurements. Now, the five goals are laid out pretty clearly, and how those goals are set in each district, in each school, it varies from that school, depending on grade level bands, depending on, again, their local students. And then again, a process to evaluate that those students' progress. How is it that you know students are growing? How is it that you know on a day-to-day basis teachers are monitoring their learning, adjusting their instruction, and intervening where necessary? So it really calls to mind a continuous improvement process on a day-to-day basis rather than waiting for summative assessments to determine the growth of students in the district. Again, a real strength of this legislation, I believe, is the involvement of the school boards. And I would have to say that in the last 18 months, I've talked to more school board members than I have principals under this because they're really becoming engaged. They want to do the right thing by their students, and this is an opportunity for them to really step out and be leaders in their district. And so we did present to the Minnesota School Board Association last year. We continue to have conversations. I'm pleased to see SBA represented here today because they've been great partners in this work as we've gone along. On page 6, we also want to make sure that districts have a system in place to evaluate the effectiveness not only of instruction, but also of a curriculum alignment with the assessments. So again, the pieces of legislation passed around teacher and principal evaluation and development fit right into the world's best workforce, as well as the ongoing curriculum alignment with state assessments and local assessments that districts do on a day-to-day basis. And then again, to integrate practices of high-quality instruction, rigorous curriculum, instructional technology, collaborative professional culture that supports teacher quality, performance, and effectiveness. Again, and giving educators an opportunity to meet and discuss quality instruction, student learning, student data, and interventions where necessary. Page 7, another piece of the critical piece of that is the providing evidence-based strategies for improving effective classroom instruction. Again, student achievement results that drive that instruction. So data analysis has become part and parcel, part of the work of teachers and principals now in our schools. Knowing where students are, measuring their progress, intervening where necessary, changing curriculum where necessary, improving quality of instruction in the classroom. Then also the plan asks for them to discuss their budget, how they plan in financing the educational components of this plan, and just again to ensure the sustainability of the plan as they move forward. Page 8, I talked about the advisory committee. This piece of legislation has always called for an advisory committee. This asks for a kind of a reconstituted advisory committee, and many districts have taken that to heart, engaging their community in rigorous discussions about student learning and student achievement. And finally, on page 9, districts are to create a report annually on their plan results. So they are to create a plan this fall or this past fall for the work that they'd done in the previous year. That report then, as usual, to be posted on the website, communicated to stakeholders. And again, we saw that as an opportunity for districts to tell their story about the good work that's going on in their districts and how students are progressing achievement-wise, but also an opportunity to share challenges if they need to and to be able to appeal to their stakeholders for the assistance that they need in various areas if that is something that's standing in the way of student achievement. From that report, then, the only piece of work that districts are to do with in terms of MDE is to submit a summary of that report on an annual basis. And so this past fall, we have been in the process of collecting these summaries. We've tried to keep that to one page. And then the department and commissioner's office is to review those summaries, monitoring the progress that districts are making over the three-year period. And so we will, I'm sure, over the course of the next couple of years, be reporting back on that. Page 10, I just wanted to share briefly some of the statewide data on the five goals. To give you a little bit of a context as you look at, you know, you talk to school district leaders about their goals. I want to share some of the metrics that are out there that they may be talking about. The very first goal about having all students meet school readiness goals was one that many school districts struggle with from the start. Not everyone is engaged in early learning programs. If you are a charter school that's a 8th grade through 12th grade charter school, you know, how do we talk about kindergarten readiness, or how do we ensure that if I'm an elementary charter school that we have graduation goals in mind? So again, it may not be that hard and fast SMART goals are appropriate for all five goals for every institution. But on the other hand, how are you ensuring that your students are prepared to move on to a secondary school if you're an elementary school? And how are you taking and assessing every student coming in? If they come to you as a 7th grader for the first time, how are you assessing their reading skills and their other ability levels so that you can tailor your instruction to them? That all of those pieces come into that conversation. But four districts, K-12 districts, we have had a school readiness study that started in 2002. It is only reported out in 5% of the students every year. Again, it's a sampling that is done every year and gives us that readiness measure at 70-some percent right now in the state of Minnesota. However, 2 years ago, the department engaged in a two-year pilot to increase the number of tools they researched, assessment tools aligned with the early childhood standards, and the pilot has been going on, and right now they're in an equitable study in terms of aligning those assessments, and they'll narrow it down to three assessments by this fall that are basically equal measurements of the early childhood standards, and then those assessments will be made as available as a battery for all districts to use to measure this very metric. And again, that kindergarten assessment is not a test per se that's administered to a kindergarten, but it's actually administered by a teacher throughout the course of the year, monitoring the progress and assessing those same skills throughout the course of the year. So it's an accumulative body of data that those teachers have, and then based on that, they can set a metric as how prepared those students were when they came in. More importantly, for first grade teachers, they love that because they're going to have a whole source of data that they can use to start school students out in first grade.
Assistant Commissioner, we'll do some Q&A following, but a clarification, did you say about 77% of students, the estimate, would be ready for K in Minnesota?
Study that we do, the preparation study, and again, that only measures 5% of our students in the state of Minnesota.
Is that statistically valid?
Excuse me?
Would you deem that statistically valid?
For the part of the measure of study that is done, it's valid because the process is the same process every year. It'll be interesting to see when we start using universal kindergarten assessments for every student what that number looks like in the future. Guarantees there. We've not done that before yet as a state. And I know that a lot of our early childhood and our kindergarten teachers have been using assessments, but again, that's kind of been all over the board. There's been no standardization. So this will give us some good standardized information. And again, that will be the source of data for districts to be able to use in the future for their kids.
But 77% is an appreciable gain from what usually...
It's been ticking up every year, yes. Yes. And again, we've seen some real benefits from the early learning programs that we've already engaged and invested in the last few years. And students are coming more ready than ever to school by the standard that was set with the preschool readiness assessment.
Senator Kiffmeyer, I just wanted to get the clarification, but we will go to you first following the question. Please proceed. Yes, Assistant Commissioner.
Age 11, the second goal is that all students are reading at grade level in third grade, which has been a research-based metric that has been accepted in the literacy circles for years. And what you have in here is the third grade MCA assessment. Now, obviously, that's one assessment that educators use, but it is a good summary assessment data piece that we can look at. And as you can see, the light-shaded bars are 2013, dark shaded 2014. We continue to make upward gains in each of our, not only all students, but each of our student groups as well. And so we'll keep working on that. And again, teachers in the classroom that teach reading have reading assessments they operate on sometimes in a weekly basis to measure student growth in reading. And then page 12, close the achievement gap among all student groups. This was introduced with the help of our multiple measurement rating that in our federal accountability system. Every school, whether they are a Title I school or not, receives an MMR rating, and part of the MMR rating is gap closure calculation. That is, how fast are students closing that gap from where they are to 100%. So if we the goal there, you can see in the bottom page 12, is that Minnesota schools are showing progress to reduce gaps by 50% by the year 2017. And again, we've talked to educators and district leaders, is closing an achievement gap by 50% over a period of years, is that doable? And they've shown in their districts that it's very doable, and they're on track to do that. If we take a look at page 13, You can see some statistics there based on our MMR measurement.
MMR,
multiple measurement rating. Yes.
If it's the neighbor watching or listening,
Measurement that we use to identify schools under a federal accountability system. It is a measurement that we get that includes student proficiency combined with student growth. Right. So how is an individual student growing from one year to the next? There's an achievement gap calculation, how fast a group of students within a district are growing and closing that achievement gap. And then for schools that have graduates, a graduation rate is the fourth one figured in. If they don't graduate students, they have the three. Each of those metrics have been utilized through the use of our MCA assessments, and so every district gets a multiple measurement rating. And we also have then a focus rating, which is a measurement of proficiency, just proficiency, and the achievement gap closure. And so those focus ratings and multiple measurement ratings will show districts various pieces of information to use. One of those is how fast their students are closing that gap from 2012 to 2017. So when you take a look at page 13 and you see a percentage of schools that are on track, for instance, the first one, 75% of schools are on track in all student groups in math. That means that 75% of the districts are on track to meet that 2017 goal if their growth continues at that rate. However, they have to understand that the targets move upward every year, too. That's the only way you can make that progress. So the targets move. Students need to move as well. So we've been sending out, this is the second year we sent achievement gap data right to the schools to show them not only how their students are doing in terms of closing the gap, but exactly how many students they are missing that measurement by. So now it becomes very real data that they can use in setting their goals and also setting their interventions for students if necessary. We were very encouraged by the achievement gap closure status, of the on-track status of schools in reading and math. And again, when you take a look at 75% of schools are on track in all student groups, all those listed above, four missing in one, those are all the different ways that schools could not be making the target. And we have 75% making all those targets or just missing in one. So, again, we feel that districts are doing a really good job of focusing on achievement gap. It's something that's not been looked at in metrics in the past, and now this provides districts and parents and state school boards with information to really look at the measurement on that particular goal. And it's one that I hear anecdotally from districts that has really helped them wrap their minds around how kids need to continue to grow and progress in their learning. On page 14, we have a chart showing the graduation rates. And again, you notice all students as well as the student groups. We have posted from 2012 to 2013 positive growth in all those areas. And some student groups have really excelled in increasing their graduation rates. And, of course, we have a long ways to go with that. Goal of 90% graduation rates for all students by the year 2020 is the MDE goal. And, again, our districts are working hard to meet that goal and continue pushing. And a lot of the work that we're talking in terms of Senator Weber and some of his colleagues about workforce development, we are really looking at districts for the first time getting really serious about not just achieving a graduation diploma, but preparing students for the workforce. And what are we doing in our K-12 arena, partnering with higher ed and business to make sure that our students are prepared for that career and college platform when they do graduate. So the last metric is around career and college readiness. And right now, we don't have a set test score that measures, one measurement for it, but we look at multiple measures for that one as well. Over the next couple of pages, you have some data that show the number of students in Minnesota schools that take the ACT score and the composite score that we show increasing. Our students have continue to excel in the ACT test, and now we're expanding that to all students, as many states are expanding to ACT tests as the high school assessment. In conjunction with ACT, we're taking a look at the number of students that are in concurrent enrollments by race and ethnicity on page 16. So again, we've had heard quite a bit in the news lately about PSEO and concurrent enrollment conversations around how do we students engage in apprenticeships and post-secondary education while they're still in high school. So that conversation, I hope, will be one that we will continue to have both in legislature but also in our K-12 arena to help every student have that pathway to a career or post-secondary education. Page 17, advanced placement exams, AP exams as they're called. And again, AP exams being rigorous. And we've seen the increase in students in the state of Minnesota that have taken the advanced placement assessment as well. And our numbers, actually our achievement numbers, have gone up with our number of students taking it, which you would think would go conversely, but I think it speaks again to the strong preparatory programs that our schools are providing our students. And then finally on the back page, and then I'll pause for some questions, but on the back page we've set up a couple of different contacts here. We send out regular updates through the superintendent's newsletter, which all superintendents get, as well as a plethora of other partners in education through the state of Minnesota, and so we try to keep that as our main communication line on a regular basis. And we also do have an email box that has been set up and is monitored for questions, and this is where districts sort of send their summaries to, and so there is an opportunity for them to ask questions and gain more information about World's Best Workforce. I would just wrap up by saying that since legislation was passed in 2013, we took to a team of people and took to the road around the state of Minnesota in the fall of 2014. We presented to over 2,000 people across the state of Minnesota. Virtually every district was touched in the state, as we kept record. And I had an opportunity to sit in with many leadership teams from districts, including Anoka Hennepin. I was able to sit in on parent advisory committee meetings at night with some districts. And again, I would venture to say, generalize by saying that our school districts have embraced the World's Best Workforce legislation as a means of pulling together their strategies and their work that they already are doing in their district and putting it in a comprehensive plan to share with stakeholders. So again, we thank the support that the districts have received and that MDE has received in working with the legislation. So with that, I would entertain any questions you might have before we go on to our next speaker. I think we're just about out of time. So,
Commissioner, the chair asked me to speak about the number of schools that have not reported in, and what are you doing about that? And can you tell us if you're working with them or if they are planning to come with information?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Whenever.
We will, again, the summaries were, there was no due date on the summaries. And so we just said, get them in the fall as the data comes out to you. Make sure you don't just write a summary for the sake of filling out a piece of paper. Really think thoughtfully about what you said you were going to do last year and what your goals were for student learning, how you achieve those goals, what strategies did you have in place, and so forth. So we wanted to give them time to really make sure that they created a summary of their work that was helpful to them in their own work. Those have been coming in all fall long. We had some of those in early October. We've had summaries coming in almost on a daily basis. And we look at them, make sure that they're containing the material that the summary template has. And we did create a template form, kind of go right down the list of what they should put in there. But they can use that template or a structure that they devised themselves. And as of last week, we had about 100 districts and about 90 charter schools that were still working on those summaries. We put some reminders out. The commissioner sent a note out on Monday. And let's just say the person administering that box has been very busy this week. And I would hesitate to give you a number today because we are getting 20 to 30 of them a day in the last several days. So I would anticipate that we'll see all those summaries come in within the next week or so. At the same time, I think what I, in one conversation I had with someone, they go, oh my gosh, we were so busy getting this plan out and meeting with people and setting up our public meetings and so forth, I just forgot to send that in. So again, gentle reminders that it's kind of this cyclic type of process where you're reflecting on last year. At the same time, you've used that reflection to set a new plan for the current school year, and you were implementing that, communicating that to the parents and stakeholders. So, you know, first time for a collection of the summaries, it's the only piece that they need to submit to the MDE. I always just kind of joke with them and say, you don't need to send me your big plan. We've got plenty of plans at the department. That plan is for you and your stakeholders. And that's your tool to share, again, the good things going on in the district. So we'll continue to monitor those and get those in, working with districts that have questions. And many times there are new leaders that have gone into the district or school. And they need that assistance. Like, this is brand new to me. I need some help and support. So we spent quite a bit of time on the phone and on the road working with districts to get those summaries in.
Commissioner, my own question, and then we'll go with Senator Kiffmeyer and Senator Dames. Very short answer. Are the schools that have not sent in their reports, are they having put together an advisory committee at all? Do you know? If you don't, that's okay.
I don't know. You know, I assume that all those pieces of the legislation are being followed. Sometimes turning in paperwork is just one of those things that is overlooked. And so we're just working with them to get that piece out of the way so, like I said, they can move forward with all the work that they're doing this year.
Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here today. Interesting information. Just a few questions. We would expect, and I know this is early on, that the correlation of the 77% ready for kindergarten, that would correlate to the third grade benchmark as well. I know it's early, but would you agree that would actually be probably the best measurement, is to see third grade statistics go up correlating to that readiness?
Well, I think there's a number the number of factors that figure into that, and that would include the fact that we're moving to an all-day kindergarten program in the state of Minnesota, which really gives students a boost for that as they get ready for that third grade assessment. We're finding stronger early learning programs and more students coming into kindergarten with the ability to read and have many more skills than they've had. So it would stand to reason, I would agree with you, that we should be seeing, I would think, within a couple of years, a pretty significant spike in the third grade reading scores because of the supports and structures that are being put down at the lower level working toward that. So by the time that kindergarten student gets done and they've been assessed all year long by that teacher and now passing that rich body of data on to a first grade teacher, now as a first grade teacher, I have a different student sitting in my class than I'm used to. So I need to adjust my teaching and make sure that I'm meeting the needs, not where my students used to 5 years ago, but where my students are today with this data in my hands. So no crystal ball, Senator, but I would agree with you on that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, just a little follow-up. Just a question on page 15 on your chart on the ACT composite. Everybody went up except our Asian students, compared to the national average, are actually lower, and it kind of stands out as unique. And generally, we find Asian students, that is not the case. Is there any explanation why they would not fit the trend that we're seeing on all the other groups?
Commissioner Dibb.
Senator Kiffmeyer, I would hesitate to, again, point to a single reason, but it is also a student group that is growing significantly in the state of Minnesota, that we're finding more English language challenges as students move into the state, that are various members of various student groups. And so I think what we found is that Asians overall, as you can see on the chart, have performed fairly high in the state of Minnesota. But we would have to break out the demographic data and geographic data and find out where those students are those Minnesota students who have been in Minnesota school districts, or are they students new to the state, new to the country?
Okay, and just one last one, Madam Chair.
Senator Kitmer.
Thank you. In regards to the statistical information that you have, there's kind of a presumption that this is based on 100% of all of our schools. In fact, it sounds like we may be lacking some data from a few schools that have not yet submitted their 2013 report. So when I'm interpreting this data, it's based upon not necessarily 100% of the schools. Would that be correct?
Commissioner Dibbs.
Senator Kiffmeyer, this data is representative of the data that MDE collects statewide from assessments, statewide from ACT and so forth. So we don't take any of the data that is submitted individually by districts and figure it into this. This is separate data.
Very helpful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer, for your question. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner Dibb. Just to kind of follow up what Senator Johnson's questioning a little bit, I understand there is a penalty for not reporting. Is that correct? And if so, could you tell me what that penalty is?
Commissioner
Dibb. Senator Dames, there is not a penalty for not submitting, but over 3 years we are to review the summaries, the collective three summaries over 3 years, and then the commission has the authority to determine whether a school is making progress on their goals, and if not, then they would. Commission has authority to sit down with the school district and reserve up to 2% of their general fund to again address those shortcomings in their district. And so it's not a withholding; it's actually help reconstitute that 2%. In terms of the submission of the summary, there is no penalty for that.
Thank you, Commissioner Dibb.
Commissioner, I presume you're counting the ones that you're receiving right now as the first report, and that probably at the end of the year there will be the second report. So these schools maybe would be up to date after the end of this school year.
And every district that we work with in terms of helping them get the summaries in and establish their plans, you know, try to get them on that cycle. And actually, the next time that we'll see a summary coming in from them is next fall when they are summarizing this current year. So the summary and the report always comes a year later. The plan is put in place for the current year. And the report on the plan in the fall, summary of the report as well.
In order to keep the agenda going, I'm going to take the right to make one statement, and that is about the way you collected your data. I'm wondering if you would be able to talk about the number of students that have not been, that are not qualifying, because if you look at the districts, some of the districts that are doing very poorly might be the very big districts, so that would make a very large number, even though the district number might look good. So that's a statement from myself that would not ask for a response from you, but to consider that, and if you could help me with that, I would appreciate it. With that, any other questions? Otherwise, we'll move on to thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For your good information. Mary Wolverton and Ginger Gustafson, Assistant Superintendents at Anoka Hennepin School District. And I see Steve Kerr is here, too. So if you care to join, you can, Steve. And if you would identify yourselves before the record before you start your presentations.
Senator Johnson, members of the Senate Committee, good morning. I am Ginger Gustafson, and I am an associate superintendent for the middle schools in the Anoka-Hennepin School District.
And good morning. I am Mary Wolverton, Associate Superintendent for Elementary Schools in the Anoka-Hennepin School District, overseeing 24 elementary schools.
And members, I want you to know that I represent the Anoka-Hennepin School District, so, and I'm very proud of them and their work they're doing.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having us here this morning to report out on our progress on the world's best workforce. And before I get started, I do want to send a huge thank you to Mr. Dibbs for all of his support in leadership and getting the frantic phone calls of saying, you know, where do we go next? So I do want to acknowledge his work with our district, with our World's Best Workforce plan. So as we have been building off an already strong foundation in Anoka-Hennepin of our systemic work, and you have received a legislative briefing regarding our work, and on page 2, on the top paragraph, we do outline our continuous improvement model that we have used as we have been working on our World's Best Workforce plan. The World's Best Workforce legislation has really provided us with further guidance, further direction, and I would also say a stronger collaboration with the Minnesota Department of Education. I think our biggest challenge around the World's Best Workforce has been just the amount of time of pulling together all of the information from the several departments across levels and really packaging them up into one plan. However, at the same time, there really has been a sense of pride in the fact of all the work that has been done and a celebration of that work. And one of the other challenges is transferring all that work from the education speak, if you will, to understandable language for all of our stakeholders, because we know that if there's an awareness and an understanding that all those arrows are in alignment, that it's a stronger plan. As you look at your information at your legislative briefing on page 2, the way we've laid out this briefing is surrounding each of the World's Best Workforce measures, we've established action steps, which are signified by a solid bullet. An evaluation and monitoring tools, which are designated by an open bullet. And then our data depicting our progress under each of those goals. And next, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Wolverton.
Thank you. What I would like to speak to this morning is a brief overview of how the work that we have done in our district is aligned to the legislation on World's Best Workforce. Specifically, what I'll be speaking to is pre-K-3 programming in alignment with World's Best Workforce. So I'll reference, have you look at page 2, specifically the area of All Students Ready for Kindergarten. It's exciting for us that we actually started this work on a very significant level several years ago. What we started doing is thinking about developing pre-K-3 programming in our district. In that, with early childhood programming, we looked at that from a lens of 3 significant variables: professional development, data systems, and standards. And so in that, what we started doing is working with early childhood staff, and we began with the leadership. And in that, we had all of our elementary principals and all of our early childhood supervisors participate in 2 full years of the Minnesota Principals Academy. After we completed that work, and actually some of it was parallel to that, we started looking at our data systems that were within our district or not in our district. So we started looking at how can we develop data systems with technology where a kindergarten teacher is going to be able to go online and view what the data systems are and what the data is that we have on our incoming kindergarten students. So that took us a bit of time to do that. What we started doing as we started getting those systems into place was we started developing professional development with our early childhood staff and our kindergarten teachers, taking the kindergarten standards and back mapping those and defining for ourselves in the district what it meant to be kindergarten ready. And so in that, we started aligning what was the instruction, the standards, the curriculum, and the professional development for our pre-KK teachers and our K teachers. That was a number of years that we worked on that. Our board was very supportive of us in doing some strategic investments. Currently in our district, we are able to capture approximately 1/3 of our 4-year-olds in our district, And in that, we have approximately 2,600 kindergarten students, so we're capturing about one-fourth and one-third of those four-year-olds and supporting them in defining and helping them be ready for kindergarten. The challenge with having students ready for kindergarten in our district is about two-thirds of those students, we rely on the parents' abilities, skill sets, and systems to make that happen. So what we have done with that is a great outreach in the community. Several years ago, we started a process where we identified we had numbers of students not going through early childhood screening. We reached out to 2,600 different areas within our district, medical clinics, daycare, private and public, doing an outreach to try to get more parents to bring students in for early childhood screening. And then in that, what we started doing is looking at how could we capture kids that are flagged as needing interventions and do outreach for those students in that time. As Mr. Dibbs referred earlier with the data, as you can see on the data on page 2, of our one-third of our four-year-olds that we work with, we are starting to see great gains. Last year, we saw in our kindergarten benchmarks, I mean our pre-K benchmarks at the end of the year, 80% of those students were proficient on the end-of-year math benchmark, and 90% of them were proficient at the end-of-year benchmarks in literacy. That provided a great skill set for those students as they came on that first day of kindergarten. Senator Kiffmeyer asked a great question about kindergarten proficiency, and I'm going to move on to that next step. When we look at kindergarten proficiency and kindergarten readiness, we know on the first day in kindergarten, based on the assessments we do that first month of kindergarten, whether or not a student is already tracked for interventions. And so we start working very significantly with those students. And you can see the data. We've done a concentrated effort in math, and we are focusing on that in literacy as well. In 1 year's time, we saw a 20% gain on end-of-year proficiency in kindergarten in math. And we're hoping we see those same results in kindergarten this year in literacy. What we know for our students, looking at our trend data in kindergarten, if a student meets the benchmarks at the end of kindergarten, they have a 95% correlation to third grade proficiency. That is significant. What we know about third grade proficiency is the national, the national research on third grade proficiency is significant. If a student reaches proficiency at the end of third grade, there is a statistically significant correlation to high school graduation and college and career success. So we know in that, when we look at our third grade proficiency scores, which are on page 3, Mr. Dibbs referenced earlier that the statewide data is that currently we have 58% of students in third grade in the state of Minnesota proficient on the end-of-year third grade MCA literacy exam. What's interesting about that, and I would agree with Mr. Dibbs, there are a lot of assessments that inform instruction between the first day of kindergarten and that third grade MCA. Teachers are working very significantly on that. In our district, we're above the state average, but only by 1%. While we're excited about the fact that we're above the state average, I'm concerned about the fact that we have 41% of our students at the end of third grade not proficient in literacy. When students go into their first day of fourth grade, it's a game changer for them. If you're not reading at grade level, when you start fourth grade, students are now in a mode where they have to be able to read to learn rather than K-3, they're learning to read. And so things change for them systemically in fourth grade. So our work has been pretty significant in trying to address that concern. In that, I think the piece that we celebrate while we are continuing to use the framework of the world's best workforce to guide and support us in our strategic investments and our systemic thinking, we do celebrate the fact that when we consider closing the achievement gap, and there was some conversation about the state exams and the multiple measures rating, we have been very strategic and I would say very tight in our district with the funding that the state provides us. We are very systemic with what we do with the funds in our compensatory at pilot, as well as with our title funds we receive from the federal government. In our 24 elementary schools, 14 of them receive title funds. Of those 14 schools, 10 of them this year earned designation status by the Minnesota Department of Education, so they were designated as either a reward school or a celebration eligible school, and we had no schools that that earned an designation of focus or a priority school. So our schools are being successful with the funding that we were receiving from the state, and we've been very strategic. And in that, in looking at the data, and we've had staff from the Department of Ed come out and work with our principals, we are making significant gains in two areas, closing the achievement gap and academic growth, while we are still trending forward on proficiency.
And we have chosen in our presentation to spend more time up front on our pre-K readiness, our kindergarten readiness, and
Excuse
our grade
me, I'm
three
gonna
proficiency.
Put your name out for the record. We're now hearing from Ms. Gustafson.
Thank you, Senator Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
We've chosen to spend more time up front because we recognize how critical those benchmarks are for our future success. And so as we talk about the achievement gap, we are actually one of the districts that are on track to closing the achievement gap by 50% by 2017. And on the bottom of page 3 and the top of page 4, there's our data that outlines our work as compared to the state in closing the achievement gap. And I would say in this area, there's really a heavy focus on professional development and really meeting kids at the door, our students and families at the door, and allowing them to thrive in the environment that will help them thrive. And so it's really an area of professional development, and some of our professional development is listed there. Our student groups are outperforming the state, and especially our students of color and our students in special populations are increasing at greater rates.
And where, Ms. Gustafson, and where is that reported in this briefing?
Overall, that's on page 4.
Okay.
It's titled Overall MCA Reading Proficiency by Student Groups, Grades 3, 8, and 10, and then the chart below represents math proficiency.
And to you, Ms. Gustafson, or whoever, I presume you're looking at the return on investment and have determined that you get the most return on investment when starting with the very young people. Is that true?
Senator Johnson, that is correct.
That was a loaded question. Thank you very much, and if there are any questions, maybe one or two in the interest of time and looking at our agenda, we need to move on, so if it's possible. Senator Deems.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and if either one of you would answer this question. The world's best workforce is certainly a piece of legislation that looks to be working very well. Could you tell me what the best part of this for your school district has been, but also maybe are there areas within this process that we should be looking at in order to make it easier to implement or continue with the program? Just give me a short summary for both of those questions. Thank you.
Ms. Gustafson?
Senator Johnson, Senator
Dames.
That's a very good question. I would say in general this legislation has really enabled us to have stronger alignment across systems, so across E12 plus, as well as across departments. And so I think that's really been the strength of this. And also, again, that stronger collaboration with the Minnesota Department of Education. This is a more qualitative answer, more anecdotal answer, but I would say that those two areas have been the greatest areas of strength for us. And then our challenge really is pulling all of this work together, because there really has been, over the years, multiple plans, for example, our title plans, our literacy plans, over the years. And so it's been compiling all of that information and really putting it in a package, if you will, that is available for everyone to really understand what the work is. So I would say that has been one of the challenges. Did that answer your question?
Yes, and thank you.
Senator Bono.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Gustafson, I was in a different committee hearing, so I missed the department's remarks, but recently was at a meeting with one of my school districts who mentioned that the reporting associated with the world's best workforce was duplicative, that several different individual reports were already things they had to do, and then pulling together what was required for this legislation was very cumbersome. I asked my district because we had heard that there were many districts who hadn't submitted reports. So I asked my district, tell me about why that might be. What are the issues? And that's what I heard. Could you comment on that?
First of all, Senator Bonnet, we did, it was a discussion that was took place after the department's presentation, and there were some good responses, but I'm very interested in hearing what one of the real players says about it.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson, Senator Bonnet. Being such a large district, and I would say even districts across the board, you are correct in what you are hearing across the board, is that there have been multiple plans within multiple departments through multiple levels. And really bringing all of those people at the table. And it's not only about just putting the plans together and combining them in one document, so to speak, but it's really about sitting down, and you need to have that conversation and that dialogue across levels, across departments, so there is a collective understanding about why these plans are going into this document. And so that's where the time comes in, is actually, it's just not a matter of grabbing, it's a matter of really understanding, because this is our school district plan. This is our community plan. And that's where the time is.
Thank you.
Ms. Gustafson, from your comments, I gather that you have found it to be a valuable process for reaching the goals of the world's best workforce. Is that correct?
Senator Johnson, yes, another softball for me. Yes, that it actually has. And if I were to say one thing in moving forward, any additional funding on the formula would certainly continue to support that work. So I would throw that out there as well.
Tip for tap. Thank you. And again, I truly appreciate the data that has been put forward by the Anoka Hennepin School District for me. And I applaud your work. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And because we're running a little behind, only 10 minutes, Troy Miller, please, and Sharon Burrell from North St. Paul Maplewood School District, mm-hmm. The Chair's District. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Troy Miller. I'm the Assistant Superintendent in North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale School District. This is my ninth year in the district in this current position, and Sharon and I are kind of whispering back there, trying not to say some of the same things that you just heard. But just in summary,
I interrupt to ask if you have returned in your report to the department?
Oh, yes, we have.
Oh, yes.
We are the first to do that.
Yes. For sure.
Yep. So, again, just...
Mr. Miller.
Our work in this area, again, mirroring some of the things that you just previously heard, but from my level, the big picture pieces that we're seeing are the collaboration across our district. We've been doing a lot of things, great plans, a variety of things at a school level. So it's just pulling all of this together, the coherence at a school board level, a cabinet level, a principal level, teaching and learning all, you know, staff and parents. So again, similar things that you just heard. But that to me was some of the biggest challenge, but also some of the greatest work across our district was aligning the things that we're doing, those conversations, everything coming together. Sharon is going to get into some details. I know we're running a little bit behind, but we're want to have some time for some questions as well. But the coherence, there's a lot of work, a lot of detail. Sharon's done a great job in pulling this together. As you heard, some of those obstacles, similar case in our district, the challenges there, a lot of things behind the scenes, a lot of time. But again, we also do see some great benefits to it as well.
One of you, Mr. Miller or Ms. Burrell, if you tell us the makeup of your school district, I'd appreciate it.
Yes.
I'm talking about,
yep.
You know,
we're about 10,500 students. So we have two high schools, three middle schools, nine elementaries. We're about 52% free and reduced, 50+% students of color, and very transient population. We have been told that we are changing more rapidly than any other district in the metro area around our demographics over the last 10 years, so significant changes. The major one most recently, which also came up, was with our EL population, and we also believe that is some of the biggest impact on some of our reading assessment data there and what we're trying to do to meet the needs of those kids. So,
thank you. Appreciate that.
I'm Sharon Burrell. I've been in the school district in North St. Paul for over 20 years, serving as a classroom teacher and as the curriculum coordinator, staff development, and QCOMP coordinator for the last 9 or 10 years. And what makes the world's best workforce work in District 622? It provided us structure and guidelines to support student learning from early childhood to college and career readiness. And the purpose was intended to be one coherent plan that was a continuous school improvement and that accountability piece. And one of the biggest changes that we've intentionally made with this legislation is the community engagement component. And so our district's former curriculum advisory committee has taken on this role, and that's been my greatest learning with this new legislation and actually the most rewarding work that I've been doing over the last couple of years. So with the pre-K to post-secondary engagement component, that encouraged us to reach out to Century College, which is right in our district. And so we reached out intentionally to Century College. They are now, we have two members of academic deans and admissions folks that are part of our committee. They presented just last month to our committee, and they're helping us make sure that our students are ready for post-secondary. So that's been a big change for us in that engagement. And the pre-K programming. We as a system are working to build pre-K. We were fortunate to have all-day kindergarten supported by our school board for a number of years. So for us, our work is more in the pre-K areas. And so we're working very hard to get equitable access to programs in our district. The benchmarks to measure the progress. The school readiness goal, that was one where we had each of our 9 elementaries kind of doing an entrance for their kindergarten, but it wasn't consistent across. So this past summer, we've trained all 9 of our elementaries, common, and we're using a common assessment. So that piece of the legislation prompted us to do something more systemic. The third grade literacy proficiency, we were working with the Read Well pieces already and the MCA, and we do other formative assessments during the year. Closing achievement gaps for all groups. We had I think this is about our 9th or 10th year of having a school improvement retreat where we have all of our buildings come to our North High cafeteria area. Each team has a table, they have their own LCD, their own data, and we do a systemic goal-setting process. Do you want to say a little more about the improvement process?
Superintendent Miller?
Again, I just, over the years, we just continue to refine it. It's one of the best days of the year. I feel like just getting everyone together. We have common message, training, a variety of things. So, again, that was one of the things that we said we've done really well over the years, but it also helped to continue to align those conversations with this new legislation.
It was, and we already were requiring all of our sites in our district to set achievement goals for gap closure for each of our student groups. So that wasn't new for us, but it gave us continued emphasis. And as a system, now when I think about holding a professional development day or doing any curriculum work, equity is always at the table with us, always at the table. And so now we're trying to bring in the multi-tiered systems of support, the MTSS piece, that we don't have all fully refined yet. But the collaboration between the departments, as the NOCA Hennepin district spoke to, absolutely, that's a piece. All students graduating from high school and all students attaining college and career readiness. And as I said, our partnership with Century College has been very helpful to us. I attended one of the meetings that the commissioner held, Commissioner Casilius, and she assured us that this was to help us take what we were already doing and tell our story. And these actual physical setup of our advisory meetings have changed. What we do with this advisory piece now is, it used to be like this, where I would tell them where we were, what we were doing. Now they're always in collaborative groups. They always have an opportunity to respond to questions. And our advisory members are sending me articles and websites of things that they want us to learn about together. So thinking about the commissioner saying a way for you to tell your story and engage your community, that was what rang true for us and an area for us to work on. The existing structures that we already had, we continued to work on those. How do we do it? Well, the checklist that came out, this was constantly with me for a while, and I actually took this checklist and made them into big posters and circled them around the office area. Everyone in our office knew we were working on World's Best Workforce. And then as we figured out the monthly meetings and our work, Troy
Excuse
and I.
Excuse me, Ms. Burrell, do we have a copy?
That's the, what was from the website.
From the
the department's website.
Okay.
And so Troy and I, and we'd bring people in and sit around the table and look at all these charts, and we'd map it out. And we were reaffirmed with some of the things that we were doing, and then we could identify what we wanted to work on. But this was extremely helpful from the department, I have to say. And we were our QComp district, so some of the structures that we had in place for QComp were also supportive of this World's Best Workforce legislation. We had PLCs, and so every team was setting trimester goals, SMART goals, to be measured in reading and literacy. Staff development, we had have a strong staff development component in our district, and every time we do staff development, we're thinking about all of our student groups. We're thinking about all of our educators. We have a day coming up on January 20th. We're differentiating our professional development based on the needs of our pre-K educators, on our intervention educators, for our high school educators. So affirming that that's professional development will help us improve student learning. Curriculum improvement process, that just slid neatly into the World's Best Workforce expectation that we review curriculum and we bring things to the school board for approval. One of the strengths is we have a school board member that sits on our advisory committee. She and I are communicating frequently, and the alignment between that, the school board, and the cabinet, our school board asks for continuous updates, and we can do that.
I appreciate your presentation today. It's very rewarding for me to hear, and I'm sorry that Representative Marquardt and Senator Wieger are not here to hear the accolades from the people who are really working with this process, and I'm happy to hear from you. We have questions, so are you about ready to finish, or can you conclude your presentation
I am.
Any way that you'd like to?
One thing I would like to ask Troy to share is one of the ways we were working with engaging our community was just this week we held a public forum meeting, and I'd like Troy to share that.
All right.
Mr. Miller.
On Monday, we had our first town meeting, and it was the conversation was about race, and we had all of the community there. We had our three police chiefs. We had parents. We had a ton of students. We had our legislators, school board members, staff. So, again, it was just one of, we think, one of our favorite nights that we've had in a long time. But it was really listening. It was some starting points around this as a whole community as we're looking to work together. So we want to continue doing those kinds of efforts. We want to, it's not a one-and-done thing. The great part to it was that we want to do more of this. We want to have more involvement. We want to keep working together. There was just so many positives that came out of this type of meeting. And again, it's aligning to all the work that we're doing. The gap closure has been a major, major component of what we've been doing over the last 5 to 7 years. And we have more work to do in that area. But bringing everyone together in a forum, about 200 people showed up, and it was amazing. And the conversations were incredible. And more importantly, it's what we're doing about that information. That's the exciting
part.
Mr.
Miller, did your school district host those kinds of meetings previous to this year, or this
was the first?
This language brought on your neighborhood meeting or your district-wide meeting. Is that correct?
Yep. This was the first time that we have done this level, and again, it was one of the best things that we've done. And our board is really big on engaging our public, and it was exactly what we were looking for, and we want to do more of it.
I really hope there are a lot of people watching this if it's on TV. Senator Kiffmeyer, you had a question, and then Senator Kent.
Yes,
and maybe
you.
We'll stop at two so that we can go on.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. In understanding your report, excuse me, we have very worthwhile steps that we go through and very good goals. And so in reading through your report, like on the graduation, there are some measures of success there. But I don't know if I'm reading this report correctly, because it appears as though the grade 3 reading proficiency in the 11-12 school year was 77.6%, and in the 12-13 school year was 54.1%. And so I'm a little bit unsure, because to me the third grade reading is the greatest measure of just about everything, and we've heard from testifiers that. So could you explain, is that accurate, first of all? It's such a significant drop.
It is the significant drop when the test changed. Remember that we went from MCA2s to MCA3s, and so statewide there was the rigor of the assessment was considerably raised, and so statewide there was a drop. Are we meeting state proficiency levels in third grade reading? We are not at this point. That is accurate. But that explains the 77 to the 50.
Thank you for that answer.
Right. And I think while we are enthusiastic about the process and many, many motivations and good efforts, what matters most to our students, which is this is what it's really about, is the students. And so that is, to me, you know, just a real critical thing. Then the other thing is I also wasn't sure about your graduation rates. I couldn't quite tell for sure from your report. Again, 11 to 12, there was a drop in graduation rates, though slight. That can be whatever. And then I wasn't and then there's a 13-14 when it went up to 91, but I can't tell if this is a consistent group because it changes to North Polar Academy and Tartan. So can you explain that 81, 79.4, and 91? And
yes.
Let me track through that a little bit
better. I can. The overall graduation rate is the 81. We are implemented a Polar Academy as one of our interventions, and that is just with our 9th and 10th grade students coming in. So that is completion of credits at the 9th and 10th grade level. And so that is not our graduation rate. The 81 is the graduation rate.
Okay, and here it's, Madam Chair.
Senator Giffmeyer.
So it says 2011-81, 2012-79.4.
79.4. I'm sorry. Yes, I don't have it in front of me.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. Okay. All right. Just wanted to be sure I understand your report.
Your questions were accurate.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am proud to represent North St. Paul and Maplewood Oakdale School District.
I'm sorry about that.
Senator Wieger and I were both with the rest of the legislative delegation at that event on Monday night, and I'm glad Mr. Miller spent some time talking about it. It was incredibly powerful, and I think it's something if districts are looking for some ideas, this was a good one, and they should check in with these folks. The best part was the cross-section of the community that was there and then listening to the students. It's not surprising that students can be really honest in their commentary and what they have to say, but the way they were able to capture their experiences and share it with that group was so powerful, and it was a real testament to what we're doing in the community. And 622 has had a lot of challenges. It's had a lot of demographic changes. They don't have a lot of referendum money lying around to help pay the bills, and they're making tremendous progress given everything that they've been working with. So I just want to give a shout out. So thank you for all your work.
Thank you very much. Thank you from you, Superintendent Miller and Ms. Burrell. Thank you. And again, we have a timeline here that's scary to me, and I don't know. The chair will probably never let me chair another committee if I don't get it going. Ms. Dietrich from the Minnesota School Boards Association. Okay. And Mr. Kronquist.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we proudly represent school board, locally elected school board members across the state of Minnesota. Many of you know that, and many of you might not know, that MSBA is headquartered actually in St. Peter, Minnesota. And we have been serving school board members since 1920. The reason that I bring that up is because I just want to make the point that we have a lot of people who work behind the scenes in St. Peter who on a daily basis are enhancing the work of school board members. In our role, we are continually striving to remain relevant, to provide the best support for school board members in facing the challenges of each new year. One example that I would like to give that we have been supporting school board members recently is in the one of the most important decisions that a school board member makes, and that is hiring a superintendent and then evaluating that superintendent. When we do that, we assist them with their strategic planning because that plays into the goals of the superintendent and how their performance is measured. But more importantly today, as a result of that work, we have had the opportunity to help districts in other capacities as we visit, and that one capacity is in discussing the world's best workforce. We try to help them understand how the goals of the world's best workforce can and should be integrated into their district strategic plan and into their strategic plan for goal setting for their superintendents. So what I would like to do today is to share with you of some of the general observations that we have made in helping them in our discussions on the world's best workforce as we do other work with our school districts. So in general, most of the school districts have shared some very similar general views. First of all is that the five components of the plan make sense. Those are the priorities that we should have as school districts. Second is that this plan can be and should be the cornerstone for district strategic planning. It can and should be readily incorporated under the umbrella of your existing strategic plan, or the world's best workforce, can become the umbrella of the rest of your planning. But we must point out that that does not come naturally for all school districts, because as you all know, school districts come in many different sizes, shapes, funding, all sorts of things. So while this plan has a lot of positives, there were initially, and there still are, some concerns that it is another mandate. And you might be wondering how that might be. Well, as I think the other two school districts have reported, this plan does require staff time. I think people talked about the alignment, the pulling together, the reporting. It does not come naturally for all school districts, and it does require staff time. If, in addition, it may require new programs, new courses, new implementation of effective strategies in order to help achieve your goals. It also, as I think the other two school districts have alluded to, it does require additional staff training and development in order to get the whole school district behind a strategic plan. We all know that that takes a lot of communication. And more specifically, some of our districts cited that these additional responsibilities in many smaller school districts especially have been placed on the school principals, who are already dealing with plenty of already existing added responsibilities of the new teacher evaluation requirement. This is placing more responsibilities on our guidance counselors, who already are very focused on trying to implement things like the Safe and Supportive Schools Act well. And they are training staff on new college and career suite of assessments. They are also very much involved in trying to redesign our high schools to create so that all students are career and college ready. And once again, that does require more resources. So we do want to, at MSBA, we do want to go on record as noting that there are additional costs associated with implementing this plan in the best manner possible. Every school district wants to be successful in making yearly progress on these five World Best Workforce goals. But in many cases, the strategies in order to create the success will require extra resources. Second of all, MSBA would also like to go on record as saying, please resist the temptation to continue adding new goals to the world's best workforce. This is a long-term strategy within our school districts. And you, as we all know, any long-term successful strategy requires time, focus, and resources. And so that time, focus, and resources needs to be stabilized. And so if we at the legislature continue to add things onto the world's best workforce each legislative session, that takes away the focus. So please resist that temptation and make this as stable and long-term for our school districts as possible. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Dietrich, good advice. Mr. Kroonquist.
Well, Madam Chair, members, Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and we're going to try to help you get back on schedule here by combining our testimony, and it'll be quite brief. You already heard excellent testimony from the Anoka Hennepin and North St. Paul, and I know you're going to hear from Mr. Holton also from Bloomington. So I'm going to just hit a few key points. Number one, as you know, the World's Best Workforce Framework is a highly ambitious framework for our school districts. And as Ms. Dietrich just pointed out, it really required extensive amount of staff work at the school district level to put it into place. That said, it's also the exact framework we need, given where we are in our demographics in Minnesota, the challenges we face to make sure that we are able to compete globally and in the future. It's what we have to strive for. But as Ms. Dietrich pointed out, it is going to require some resources, some strategies. And in fact, we built our legislative platform really around the world's best workforce and identified what our board members felt were some key resources that we'll need to achieve those goals. Two key points that I hear quite a bit from superintendents and school board members. The more we can move towards truly having the World's Best Workforce report become kind of the one report that your school districts submit, And we understand that that maybe is not totally possible, but as Senator Bonnot pointed out, there is some duplication. We think we can move towards more streamlined reporting process, eliminate some other reports, or maybe not necessarily eliminate, but move them under the umbrella of the World's Best Workforce Report. I think we all agree we don't want our administrators and our teachers filling out paperwork. We want them engaged as much as possible in the business of teaching and learning. And then just to reiterate what Ms. Dietrich just said, let's take a step back and take a breath and not be adding on new goals or new requirements to the World's Best Workforce legislation right away. Our districts really need some time to implement this legislation in a thoughtful and strategic process. So I'll stop there. Madam Chair. Thank you.
With permission from the chair. It takes me back to the one Minnesota conference that we had where there was discussion about cost-benefit analysis. And, you know, when you have children that aren't going to drop out of school, when you know at fourth grade that they're going to drop out of school and probably go to prison, if you look at the prison population, what are the costs? I mean, you say it costs money, and I agree. It does. Everything costs money. Finding special ed teachers and finding people who handle kids who disrupt the school and are violent and those sorts of things are very costly. So I hope you will use your positions to invite your school boards to think that way. So thank you. But any questions, maybe one or two. Otherwise, thank you very much, and we'll have after the other, the Bloomington schools come forward, Mr. Holton, we can ask more questions. Mr. Holton, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Again, I'm Tom Holton, Executive Director of Community Services for Bloomington and Richfield Schools, and I'm pleased to be here today. Many of you, and maybe this is a metaphor how we do our business, many of you are used to seeing me here more often advocating for investments in early childhood and how we align our E3 systems. And here today I'm talking about World's Best Workforce and how those investments that we tie in early childhood, if they don't take you somewhere to third grade reading, to graduation, to college and career ready, those investments really are for naught. So today I'm going to talk about two things, really how we're doing our work in relation to the World's Best Workforce and how that is guiding our work and changing how we do things, as well as talking a little bit about some of the what and some of the things we're changing as a result of the World's Best Workforce. So I can go back in time about 5 years when Bloomington started talking about their pathways to graduation. And I don't know if it's fortuitous that we're smart or the legislature is copying us, but we adopted our pathways to graduation plan about 5 years ago. And if you look at that plan, which is essentially our way of taking our strategic work, tying it together from prenatal to graduation and beyond, and saying for each of our learners individually, what do we need to do with them to have an individual plan to take them from prenatal to graduation, college and career ready. And more specifically, if you look at our pathways plan, you'll see that there are milestones. And we have a few more milestones than the World's Best Workforce, but you'll see that our milestones that we adopted 5 years ago are in direct relation to the World's Best Workplace milestones. So they guide our work, and I know you're not often thanked for giving us additional legislation and rules to follow, but this really validated our work in Bloomington, that in fact we were on the right track and we were doing the things to prepare the next this generation for going into the workforce so that they'll actually be employed when they get there. So I'm not going to speak that much more about how we do our work other than, again, I'm here often talking about those investments in early childhood, but they're often talked about separate and away from the rest of the things that happen in K-12 and post-secondary and then what happens in the community when our students actually go into the community and get jobs. So I'm excited to be part of the conversation and the fact that we're having the conversation on a continuum of bringing our work together. More on the specific, and I'll go through this quickly. As we looked at the far end of our continuum, we were saying we were doing really a good job. In Bloomington, we consistently graduate, 90-plus percent of our students. And for those that graduate and those that go on to college, they do pretty well. And so we were doing good with that part of the population. But as our demographics have changed, as they have in many other districts, we were starting to look at, well, what about those other students, those that go on to college and those that don't? What happens to them? So we started diving into our data and saying, if we're going to truly have all students, meaning all, every single one, ready for college and workplace, we had to do something different. Knowing that 74% of the workforce would need to have some post-secondary, we looked further into the data. We know in Minnesota and Bloomington is similar that after 4 years of college, 27% of students have a degree or certificate, and after six, only half of them. Both of those measures are long ways from that 74% that we need to do. And we know that those graduates, even those 49%, when they do graduate, many of them are still employed in low-skilled jobs. And I won't go through all those numbers for you, but if you add them up, you'll see that we're spending an awful lot of money to spend an awful lot of students in investing a lot of our resources to have a lot of graduates that are serving you, and maybe you're getting great service at the restaurants and in hiring office support, but that's an overinvestment. We're not aligning our work to what we need as far as the workforce. So what we're doing differently, going from the how we're doing our work differently, looking at that data, we said, what can we do differently for our students? In addition to those that we're putting on a track to a four-year college and getting a four-year degree, what are we doing with those students that maybe not be served best by going on that track? So next fall, we'll be opening the Bloomington College and Career Academy. And I guess I have to go back again and say, as I looked about the other testifiers here today, how we do our work, MDE has helped us with this planning for our academy. Anoka Hennepin has done some of this work already. I've been working with North St. Paul because we've gotten ahead of them on our early childhood. So everyone is working even within the systems and outside the system to say, what's working? How can we do it better? So we're going to be opening our College and Career Academy in the fall, open to 11th and 12th graders so that they can simultaneously earn post-secondary credit in earning a certification, a degree, or credits towards a degree without incurring debt. So instead of spending all that time in high school getting ready to go to college, they're going to start college there. And so they'll be ready when they graduate with a certificate or some kind of training to enter directly into the workforce or go on to post-secondary in some technical field area. We've picked four pathways to start with, and within each of those pathways, there's numerous tracks that you can take. Health sciences, IT, criminal justice and law enforcement, and building and construction trades. Some of the partnerships we forged along the way. We have the building trades people and many of the technical people beating down our door wanting to get involved with Bloomington schools because they want graduates that can come and fill the jobs they have right now today. We selected those four tracks based on the fact, using deed data, that we have in-demand jobs. They're high-growth jobs, so they're not dead-end jobs. They produce livable wages upon starting in those careers, and each of the areas we're working on have stackable credentials. So you might be certified to start work as soon as you get out of high school or after a couple years of technical college, but you can additionally go back and get more skills and increase your productivity and your amount you can make over. We didn't do this alone. I mentioned we've talked to other school districts. We have four institutional partners that are helping us with this. It makes no sense for high schools to recreate what the state has built in the technical college system. So we're partnering with private and public post-secondary institutions to deliver the instruction for us. We are using their infrastructure and equipment and technology so we don't have to replicate that. We are working with the Workforce Development Advisory Council and with DEED so that when we're done, we have students that are actually prepared for the jobs that come. We're working with United Way, who is supporting this work across the state of Minnesota, taking down the barriers in delivering education in a different way, multiple places with internships, actually getting into business, being able to get to the institution that has the program. And so we're not doing this alone, but we're capitalizing on all of the infrastructure that is there, building a system that works together. I did have a short video. Unfortunately, our software doesn't match up, so I'm going to skip over that video and from there give you some contact information. You've got, again, one of our partners, AMSD. You'll see in your packet today they published a short description of our academy in their last newsletter. The aides will pass out a brochure, and here's contact information if you'd like to learn more about what we're doing at our academy. Thanks again for the opportunity to present.
Thank you, Mr. Houghton. And Senator Wicklund, I would imagine you're kind of sitting up pretty proud to hear the testimony today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'm very pleased to see that this is coming to fruition and very excited to see the academy move forward. I think it'll offer another option for students, and I think that's what we need is more options. I was going to mention in terms of the world best workforce conversation that it generates in the district, I think it's a good thing. I know that PTSA is having a session next week about different academic opportunities for students relating to, you know, simultaneous college credit, and so I think this discussion, you know, framing the discussion around the world's best workforce framework, I think will help districts, you know, allow parents to have more access to involvement as well.
I can feel the upbeat energy in this room today. It's very, very pleasant. Senator Jensen, if you finished,
yes.
Senator
Wicklund.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's see. Mr. Houghton? I am incredibly interested in what you're talking about, to be able to take it broader into other areas of the state and the amount of coordination that something like this takes. Can you just briefly explain to me a little bit about who took the lead in making it actually come to fruition from the idea phase to now we've got kids that are actually getting the certificate to that point? Was there somebody that took the lead in that to make it happen?
Mr. Houghton.
Difficult in our district to give credit for any one idea to any one individual, but we've really been moving towards a framework, as I said, for about 5 years. We have to give credit to our school board, past school board members, both in the audience and here, about promoting the idea of teamwork and building a system of education and breaking down the silos and working together. Certainly our superintendent, who is just dogged about what you're doing is never good enough, and we have these challenges and we have to take them on, and we can't just have incremental change, but we have to really take on the entire system and do better for not just the students that naturally do well, but for all of our students. And so it's been a culture and people allowed to take some, I've been allowed to take some risk in early childhood. That may be why you see me here talking about and leading our college and career academy. You might say, why is the community education director doing that? But we've really built a culture and I'd hate to identify any one person. But again, you know, the legislature has really validated the work that we have been doing, and I think as you look at our pathways graphic, you'll see that it truly aligns to the work that we've been doing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bonnoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Holton, I really, too, join Senator Jensen in applauding the work that you're doing. And it feels as though we're all working on the same problem or opportunity coming from different perspectives. You know, we introduced Senate file number 5, which is taking those same high-demand industries, and with the exception of one, or, you know, we had a different blend, but again, trying to figure out how we can support our students partnering with industry much earlier. And you've taken it from the, you know, instead of from the industry back, you've taken it from the actual high school being the engine where that can happen. And that's certainly very cost effective and efficient. And so we'll invite you to come to our committee as well, if you don't mind, and share your story, and people will have lots of questions. Are the students who are in that academy, so now they're not in their traditional high school, they're not, can they still participate in the traditional high school activities? I mean, is this a separate building? Where is it housed?
At its onset, all of our students will be enrolled at either Kennedy or Jefferson High School.
Okay.
So we'll be utilizing the expertise of our regular high school teachers to teach core academic subjects. We do have a building so that we can, instead of transporting all students all the time somewhere else at our adult campus, where we currently do our adult basic education. So our plan looks ahead to what if these students don't graduate by the time they're 21, and what happens to our immigrant learners? Can we provide these same opportunities to adults to get these certificates and degrees? So we do have a campus, but students will be at their home high schools, and then, of course, they'll be traveling when it's necessary to these technical college partners, to internship sites out in the community, so they can get real life and real job experience. So we're using some of all, but having the learning take place where it makes most sense at the right time.
Just a follow-up question,
Senator Bonnoff.
Mr. Holton, there's been you know, some issues with regard to the funding formula for PSEO, because the high school then loses that funding stream. Is that still the case with you, and are you able to financially make this work?
Finances are always a challenge. To provide new opportunities at new locations are difficult to add on when you're cutting, as Bloomington and many districts are, from your current programming. So more resources do help. It is a challenge. Again, the MDE is from the commissioner, Steve Dibbs on down, has been very cooperative in saying the legislature, everyone wants this to work. So how can we make it, how can we live within the rules we have, change the rules that we have so that we can make it work? Still some challenge about PSEO. We have a model that we think will work and make it doable. But certainly, we're living on a shoestring, and so any investment in this type of work would be much appreciated.
Thank you.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah,
and
thank
Senator
you.
Senator Stump, and then maybe we'll close out the questions.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. But Senator Bonnoff touched on the questions that I had. So, but I just want to add my congratulations to you for what you're doing. Of course, right now you're just getting ready to start the program. We're looking forward to some benchmarks and that the hope for intention actually delivers what we're hoping for it to deliver. And that's going to be the real key thing here. But I'm just so pleased that it's not just college readiness. I think there's been a good intention there. But I think these career areas are much needed, really good for students, and especially not graduating with debt. So many good things here, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you in the future when you have some of those results beginning to come through as well.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer, and I know since you're always looking at the data, we are creating evaluation plans. One of the unique things that we're doing is we're partnered with DEED. Currently, DEED has a good idea of what college students do that graduate with a four-year degree, what kind of careers they enter, how much money they make. We have a disconnect currently with what high school students that go directly into college or that don't get a degree. So we're working on data sharing agreements. So part of our evaluation will be, we can not only say to our future parents, if you take this pathway and get this certificate or this degree, here's what is likely to happen to you based on the data that we're going to try to mine from the by crossing our data with that the deed has, so that we'll be able to approve our work based on that type of an outcome.
Very good. Thank you.
Senator Stone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just kind of give me an idea how your program would differ from the program out in Anoka?
Mr. Holton.
And I don't know, I probably should, but I don't know, do the students that go through the Anoka program, do they get certificates and diplomas?
Maybe we could ask the Anoka.
We could ask one of the Anoka people, but I happen to, I happen to know that the answer to that is yes, because before, knowing that Anoka had a track record of doing this sort of work for many years and having great success, Anoka was very generous with their time, and we spent a great amount of time from them saying, what's working for you, what were the pitfalls you ran into, and how does that fit then what they're doing in Anoka into a district like Bloomington, so we could modify it to do our own way. But I'd be glad to have Anoka answer that question as well.
I think you've done quite well, Mr. Holton, in terms of Anoka.
Steve Kerr and Anoka Hennepin. Tom and I go back about 40 years together, so we do a lot of idea sharing. But the answer to the question, Senator Stumpf, is yes. I think some of the things we're doing, many of the things that Bloomington is talking about, I think one of the things, new things that we're doing or trying to do, is we're doing co-location of our adult basic education, our technical college, and also some of our students who would be in our alternative programs. We're doing some co-location of those services so that it's easier for those students to kind of move and those transitions are more natural. And we're doing some of that co-location at the technical college out in our area. And I think our STEP college is also located, the campus is right adjacent to that. So that makes for some collaborative pieces. The other piece we have, moving kind of to that stretchy end of the continuum a bit, is we've got some real tight relationships with our workforce center as we're doing some of these kinds of projects and have had some good success with that.
And Mr. Kerr, your STEP school is science, technology? I mean, for some people that might not know.
I'll probably forget them here. And now that you could throw me a softer one, I think it's science, technology.
That was a further.
Yeah.
Say it again.
Science, technology, educational programs.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stone.
I think the Anoka program is a unique program, obviously, because they have the facilities out there to do all this. And I think the program out in Bloomington is looking at a little bit more like the PSEO, going to the other some institutions that will provide the training, which gives us a couple different models. It'll be interesting to see, how other districts can participate. I think I was thinking about one model that is quite different, and that's the one that was developed up in northwestern Minnesota, but it takes in probably about 50-some school districts now, and that's delivered through the school district on-site via a number of colleges, but it's basically delivered in the school district itself, and that is maybe a little bit more traditional in the sense that they don't get into like the trades, the actual building, things like that. It's a little bit more on the science area and technology area. But I think what we're seeing is different models popping up, which is good. It'll give us an idea of what it takes for these different models to be successful, and hopefully the outcome will be these young men and women will get jobs and get hired and do well. So thank you for moving in that direction.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf. And there are multiple models, and I think this is the beauty of the legislation. It isn't a cookie cutter. What works in one community works for all. There's another model down in southwest Minnesota out of Marshall where they're doing the same sort of thing for a large geographic area, and the majority of the content is being delivered online. So we're talking to them to say when students can't get to a location on a particular day, what can we do to extend the opportunity? Again, learning many locations using all the resources that we have at hand.
Members, good questions, good hearing today. Was there anyone here that would like to testify very briefly that hasn't been put on the agenda? If not, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to you.
Yes, thank you, Sarah Johnson, for chairing the meeting today. What a great testimony, progress report. Just so upbeat, and that'll be our theme to build on the momentum, the key benchmarks that we've said that we want students to be college career ready, working on that pipeline, the vision that we have for the workforce that, and for jobs. And as we said, it starts with early learning, ready for K. And the benchmarks show we're making progress, reading proficiency, et cetera. But we won't rest on our laurels, of course. So what can we do to further advance the momentum? And that will be the number one challenge that we'll be looking at and we'll address during the session. So thank you to each testifier. The information for your district, perhaps homework. I know you meet with your school boards and others in your districts, but those progress reports will hopefully be online, or you've talked to members of your school board to see what is the progress that's being made in your area. And we don't need a cookie-cutter approach as we put together various remedies and options, but we do want to make progress. So looking at what's being done in your district and relaying those stories, I'm always open to having people from your district to testify if we can, or to go out to visit as well. But I'll ask for your guidance on that as we continue this session. So thanks again for that report to the Department of Education, and we'll look forward to building on that momentum. Next week, we will meet three times. On Tuesday, the 20th, we're going to focus on technology. There's a number of bills that are introduced, and this will all be posted online. If you have something that has not emerged yet on that subject, let us know. We'll get that on the calendar, but we will have a very full agenda for that meeting. It's going to include a presentation from Margaret Kelleher Anderson from the High Tech Association, Denise Dietrich from MSBA, and others just laying the groundwork for what the need is and the opportunity. On Wednesday, the 21st, we're going to focus on early learning. For any of the proposals that have been introduced, we will be hearing those. So, and that'll be posted as to specific bills as soon as we have them. If you want to testify, have someone that wants to testify, particularly in the audience or people electronically receiving this, please let us know. We seek to have everyone included, though our committee time and space is much more limited this session. And then finally, on Thursday, the 22nd, we will focus on facilities. And I believe Senator Dahl's bill's introduced now, and we'll focus on that. We've asked the Department of Education to do some additional information regarding the cost, information for districts as to what it might be for rolling out alternative facilities for each district in the state. We'll look at some financial options And some questions that have been raised when I met with each caucus regarding property tax impacts, and that we were seeking that information. And I believe a couple of you have asked whether your district might testify on that, and just let either Caitlin Snyder, our legislative assistant for the committee, or Nancy Livingston, the CA, let them know, and we'll do our very best to have persons to testify. So that's it for next week, and a number of items that we haven't had a chance to touch on are clearly going to be in the near horizon as well. And if there's anything that you want to follow up on to talk to me about, let's talk, and that goes for the members as well as everyone here or listening. So there'll be no further business. The committee's adjourned.
Senator, are you working on something?